All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is a renterswarehouse.com roadshow. Live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What's up, sports mappers? Welcome to the fray. It is The Usual Suspects on a Monday right here on ESPN 97.5. And, of course, ESPN 97.5 is simulcasting with SportsMap 94.1 starting right now at 3 o'clock, taking you all the way till 7. We take you till 4. Blitz takes it after that. You guys are entertained and don't have to worry about a single thing along the way. Barry and I are at Buku, 5600 Richmond Avenue, corner of Chimney Rock and Richmond. Great Cajun Eats and Treats. Daiquiris and such. Fred and AJ will be along in a little bit. They'll be here as well, broadcasting live. So if you're in the Galleria area looking for some great Cajun food, some unbelievable daiquiris, and some great scenery, stop on by and say hi. With all that being said, Barry and I and Nick have covered a lot of ground already on this Monday, and we normally do during football season between college football, pro football. Got a little Rockets in there as they're bringing Jeff Bezdelic back, which is good news for all the Kool-Aid drinking Red Nation fans. And one thing we haven't talked about yet that you guys got to get into at some point, too, was all the results of that big weekend card at, for UFC.
Yeah, Nick, did you happen to watch the card at all?
Yeah, I went back and watched it. I was out, but I went back and watched the Derek Lewis and Daniel Cormier fight.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the other fights. Somebody said on Twitter that the card was actually really good. And I said, usually that'll happen.
It does.
Even on an underhyped card, one that maybe isn't getting as much love as some of the bigger ones, they'll usually put together a pretty damn good pay-per-view-worthy card, especially as of late. But I did get to watch the main event and kind of went how I thought it would go. I was worried about the wrestling. I think that was everybody knew that Cormier was a superior wrestler, and it just showed. I mean, Derek, he wasn't able to do much because Cormier wouldn't allow the fight to be standing that long, and that was a smart play. And, you know, I've said this before on just on air in general when talking about MMA, but the reason why a base like wrestling is so effective is because it allows you to dictate where the fight takes place, and that's exactly what Daniel Cormier did. He used his wrestling to get that fight to the ground where Derek Lewis was outmatched and outgunned in every way.
I saw someone say that he was actually wrestling while standing up as well. Like, every minute of it, he was – you know, calculating his next move from a wrestling aspect of even just the standing grappling and the locks and, you know, locking down holds. And obviously I don't know it like you guys do, but said that, you know, that was obviously the main key that going in, and he lived up to the billing of making sure that his ground game was the reason why that he was able to take care of business.
I didn't see a ton of wrestling on the feet. That's usually you'll see some, you know, clinch work, dirty boxing and so forth. There wasn't a ton of that necessarily. What they probably meant was that he was setting up his shot, or he was setting up a single leg to get the fight to the ground. And a lot of that, you know, you have to be a smart wrestler. You don't just shoot in all the time. And Derek is good enough at takedown defense. But, yeah, he did a fantastic job of suckering Derek Lewis into falling for those takedowns.
Nick, what'd you see?
I mean, Lewis, obviously friend of the show, and we want him to do well, but
yeah,
he kind of – He expected him to go back to his wrestling base, and that's exactly what he did. He even said it in a post-fight interview with ESPN that he went back to his Olympic days. And if you're Daniel Cormier, you're smart by doing that. That's a big man in Derek Lewis. And we talked about it before, Barry, about how his size supplements for what he lacks in technique. And when he's on top of you, it's tiring. And when you're on top of him, he tends to get right back up. But Daniel Cormier, I think he had the smart game plan. Derek Lewis admitted he knew, Cormier knew exactly what he was going to do, and Cormier was able to capitalize off it. Look, considering when Derek Lewis got into the MMA world, I think he's an amazing fighter, considering how long he's been training MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. And considering his, I mean, and he'll be the first to tell you we've had Krubov, but he has a limited skill set. He's not great on the ground. He's gifted in other ways, but he's just not a good ground fighter. And I thought one of the keys, though, for Cormier was to be able to keep Derek in half guard and to stay in Derek's half guard, not even go necessarily full guard where Derek, I think, could just control his arms, pull him down, and hold him close and not allow anything to happen long enough for the referee to stand the fight up. And I thought staying in the half guard allowed him to work. Derek didn't know how to deal with that as much as maybe having somebody in full guard or even in mount necessarily, where I've seen Derek do just fine. But Derek's never been a guy that was scared to give up his back, but he's also never faced a guy like Cormier either. And that was one of the things that worried me, is you could see him pretty easily want to give up his back even in the first round. And I thought, man, against a lot of guys that don't have the same type of ground game and skill set, that would be okay. But, man, you give up your back to Daniel Cormier and you're probably setting yourself up for a rear-naked choke, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Do you guys feel like the lack of downtime between fights, the quick turnaround time for Derek Lewis, hurt him at all?
Nick?
I think it kind of helped him, because we always talk about his cardio. We know he gets tired. He admits to being tired. I think it kind of helped him. I think, you know, if he sat and had a full training camp, there might have been a gap where he's not training. I'm not saying he's not responsible enough. I'm just saying the fact that he's continuing off and piggybacking off of an old training camp, I think it kind of benefited Derek. I know he didn't win, but I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that I saw something to the effect of 4 fights in 8 months. I don't know that to be true, but that's a lot of fighting, especially at a heavyweight. I will say that it probably helped from the standpoint of, and something that I didn't even think about, but they talked about the fact that he didn't have, you know, we asked Bob on the show Friday, his trainer crew, Bob Perez, about the training camp, and he said he really didn't have much of a training camp, but he didn't need it because he had just come off of that other fight. So that probably also had something, helped him in some ways. Man, I just don't know if having an 8-week camp or having time off, or I don't know that the fight goes any different without Derek really getting some good sound wrestling.
Because of the gap in wrestling, it's so big. You just don't have enough time to improve all that. And let's be honest, we're obviously a friend of Derek Lewis, but we can't take any credit. It's not like we are, but we can't take anything away from Daniel Cormier. This is a guy who admitted to sneezing before the fight and his back slipped. And he literally was going to pull out of UFC 230, and he was really considering it. But he woke up, he took a nap, did some walking, his back was able to release a little bit, and thankfully he was able to make that fight happen. But, man.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah.
That's wild to hear
that. He admitted that after the fight, and that's absolutely crazy. So for him to kind of go in there, even though his back wasn't completely messed up, to wrestle a guy like Derek Lewis, even with a partial back issue, I think is a very impressive win.
Somebody texted in and said, I heard Rogan say if Lewis wanted to make a serious run at a belt, it might be time for him to move to a bigger, more disciplined camp. Here's the thing. You don't necessarily have to move to a different camp. You just have to be open to going and training with other people and training in disciplines that you're not used to. Mm-hmm. Like, Crew Bob is one of the best in the country when it comes to stand-up. Is he a wrestler? No, that's not his background. But he's got – you know, he mentioned Brazos Valley BV MMA, which is the Brazos Valley MMA. It's in College Station, and that's a huge wrestling camp out there, but it's not necessarily world-class wrestling. And yeah, would it be good for Derek to go to, like, Grudge or go to, you know, go somewhere else where there are bigger guys that wrestle? Absolutely. But you know what? If you're going to a camp that's got a great heavyweight, guess what? That guy's probably also hunting for a title. Why would he help Derek Lewis? So, yeah, unless you switch gyms, and what Rogan was saying, you're not going to get that. You're not, you know, people aren't going to be as open, but you don't have to. You can find some gyms and some wrestling camps that will work with you. So, I think he knows that. I mean, I think he knows
Does he get another shot?
Eventually, he's going to have to continue winning. I think eventually he'll get another shot, but I think he also knows what he's got to work on.
Okay. Because you're right. I mean, look, I know what I know through you guys and from my limited time being at a couple of events, and then just the fact that Derek Lewis is such a great dude that you pull for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing is, look, we talk about, oh, we know he needs to improve his ground game. He knows he needs to improve his ground game. That doesn't also mean that Daniel Cormier is going to be the champion forever. And there might be a guy with a different skill set when Derek is back making his, you know, rise again to try and go after a title. So it's not like he needs to focus solely on that. He got this far without it. But that was the difference by far in the fight. And everybody knew that was going to be the difference, too. So.
There you have it. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. We're just getting started with hour number three. We'll take you up till four. So we've got space if you want to get in here. It's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, 713-780-3776. That's our HR&P listener line where you can call and text. You can also hit us up via Twitter where it's at Barry is Funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at the producer Nick. Right now I do want to tell you about the good people at Gallery Furniture. I've been telling you about them for quite a while because I believe in the product and the people that are behind it at Gallery Furniture. Ever since I've been in Houston, I've been getting my furniture from Gallery. I've never been disappointed. I still have almost everything that I bought, and if I don't, it's simply because we ran out of space and decided to sell the furniture that we had as we moved from house to house. But the fact of the matter is, Mac does exactly what he says he's going to do, and I love that he puts his word behind everything that he puts out in his advertisements and that he lives by what he says. That means that if you go into the showroom and there's something you like, there's no back order slips. You're not going to be waiting for it for days and weeks on end. You're going to get it that same day. In fact, as the saying goes, you buy today, you get it tonight. Within 3 to 4 hours of your purchase time, the delivery people will be at your door, and they'll be delivering your furniture. It's solid wood American-made furniture from brands like Stickley and Posturepedic and Tempur-Pedic. They have all the different brands that you want to you want in your house because you know that it's not going to be something that comes with instructions and you have to put together. And you know that if you buy it and you get it in your house, you don't want to be changing it out within a year or two. You're not going to have to do any of that with Gallery Furniture because it's quality, it's good-looking stuff, it's leather, it's upholstered. It's anything and everything that you need for the living that you have on a daily basis. And the three locations are there to better serve you. Now it's not just I-45 North, exit Tidwell Parker both ways. It is the Grand Parkway between Katy and Sugar Land and, of course, the Galleria right across from Dillard's on Post Oak. And the main thing that Mac says that he's going to do is exactly what means most to you. That means that when you buy from Gallery Furniture, you guarantee that what they say is what they're going to do, and that means Gallery's going to save you money.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the big show. We are here at Buku. It is the place to be for good eats and daiquiri treats and all kinds of pretty people. And, of course, great place to watch the game. It's at the corner of Richmond and Chimney Rock. We'll be here till 4. Blitz will be here till 7. Of course, with the game tonight, you might as well stay, watch some football, and enjoy some more of the fabulous grub that's here. If you tried something for lunch, try something else for dinner. You're not going to be disappointed. Barry and I talked to you about the fact that every time we're here, we try something, and it always is tasty. For the taste buds. So covered some UFC in the big match that was this weekend in the Big Apple before the break. And we've got plenty more to get to. We didn't really get to a lot of the college football simply because it happened so early in the weekend. And there's so much to talk about when we get on the air on Monday. But obviously a bit of a disappointment when you talk about the game of the century or the game of the century for this year, the LSU-Alabama game. I was tuned in. I was hoping for the best. And I think instead we got exactly what we expected to see out of both teams.
You know, after the first quarter, you're like, okay, 6-0. You know, maybe we're in for a decent game. And it's just like LSU could never get anything going. Alabama, as we talked about that Friday, so deep, able to do pretty much whatever they want. LSU looked good. I had somebody... By the way, I had somebody tweeting me early on in the game. Are you not at home watching the game of the year? I was like, bro, I'm out here living my life. Yeah. He's like, you're missing game of the year. I'm going to call you. Those tweets stopped at about the third quarter. It's just, you know, it's not like Bama ever ran away and hid, it seemed like. But it was just they were so dominant.
It never felt like they had anything to worry about either.
It just felt like LSU defensively could hold their own, and it's what we talked about. The fact that both teams given up about 15, 16 a game, the difference was on the offensive side of the ball. Bama was so much better, has been so much better than pretty much everyone else in the country offensively as far as putting points on the board. We talked about the difference was 24, even though my math was wrong at the time. But I told you 54 points is what Bama was averaging, LSU averaging 30. This 29-0. Defensively, I thought LSU may have held them a little bit better or a little lower, but offensively, they just struggled the whole game, and they never really got anything going. And it sucks for all of our LSU fans, but
yeah, I mean, look, you look at it, and there's things that just always boggle my mind, which is with the recruiting juggernauts that are the University of Texas and Louisiana State University, with the way they crank out NFL players, why do they struggle so mightily to get a quarterback?
That's a good question.
I just don't get it. That's because everybody should want to play there. You can throw it to an OBJ type. You know, you can hand it off to a Leonard Fournette type in one situation. Or you can go to defensive back university where every day you're practicing against some great secondaries, but you can hand it off to the likes of Ricky Williams and the running backs that have gone there and the receivers and the Roy Williams and all the guys that have gone there. And each team always has a good offensive line. It boggles my mind. And the other thing that you mentioned is when you're talking about teams that figured that they could hold their own. Yeah. LSU was definitely a team that came in thinking they could hold their own. And you're right, after first quarter, this was a slugfest like we've seen before. 6-3, low scoring, exactly what you want if you're LSU. But when you talk about hold your own, the one way, even if they couldn't do it on the field, we found out is their fan base knows how to hold their own when it comes to tailgating, because we got this soundbite out of the big weekend.
Kill you out there. Record that. Well, an LSU fan came and stuck his finger in my booty. Bitch, I don't play that shit.
So apparently, if you're an LSU Tiger fan and you're losing and your team is losing or lost 29-0, you have no other recourse other than to go around sticking your finger in Alabama Crimson Tide fans' booties.
Fan came and stuck his finger in my booty.
Do you hear the anguish in this man's voice?
This is whether you call it the doorbell or ding-dong ditch, I don't know what, but LSU fans decided he had an itch that they couldn't help but scratch.
Stuck his finger in my booty.
He stuck his finger in my booty. Like, I would be so upset about that, too, though.
I don't play that shit.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm with him on this. Bitch, I don't play that. Do not. Look, you can talk about LSU and how bad that team is, and you could talk about Bama and how, you know, how they shouldn't have. Man, don't go around sticking your finger in people's booties. That is not appropriate outside behavior. You keep that in the house. Don't do that at a game, especially to somebody you don't know. That's not appropriate, LSU fan.
Yeah.
I can see Tracy doing that. I could totally see Tracy doing that.
Oh, boy.
I can see that, too. Wow. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. By the way, during the game, were you on pins and needles? I know Bama fan was when Tua went down.
A little bit. And then when you saw the replay, it was like he didn't even do it in the course of the play. It was after the play celebrating. And then when you saw that.
No, the first time on the field, the first drive, he went out. He got hurt and went off the field.
Oh, that's right, because they called the timeout thinking he could go back on. And they wouldn't let him. He had to sit out for a play.
Yeah, and then later the touchdown run celebration thing, and his leg again.
But it might have made it interesting, especially with Jalen Hurts being
that
hurt.
First time he went out, I was like, whoa, yeah, that's not
how
good.
The hell is
they
your
brought
back?
In, yeah.
How is your backup that bad? Did you see him walk out onto the field? They're like, well, you know, if he has to, he can play. The hell he could. He could hardly walk.
Where was Hurts? Was he injured?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't even
they said,
that.
And then when they were honest, they said, well, Saban basically said, unless it's an emergency situation.
He ain't playing. But
he was in full uniform coming out, and he could not get his freaking feet to get, like, more than a foot apart.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a bad, bad look.
Well, they pulled it off, though.
They pulled it off handily. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, everybody's playing for second, it looks like. I mean, do you believe that there's any team out there that can actually give them a game? Is Clemson athletic enough and talented enough and throw the ball at least well enough to give them a game?
They are the only team that I think that can give Bama, but I don't hold out much hope. I'll be honest with you. I don't hold out much hope for anybody beating Bama this year.
I'm with you, man.
They look amazing.
Chuck, you guys, you want to talk about LSU? I mean, I thought you guys had a fighting shot, but after further
What's
review.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
How y'all been?
Good, you?
Man, I just wanted to say, man, like, Alabama, the way they play the game against a good team is they're like a boa constrictor. They just, as the game goes along, they just suffocate you till you have, like, no life left. And as far as the quarterback situation around the country, man, I honestly believe there's a lot of great recruits, but I think the pressure, they just can't deal with it in a lot of these places. I mean, until Tua came, Jalen Hurts was really great at Alabama, but he's not a pro, and they haven't really had a number one pick at a quarterback over the last 10 years. So it's just really hard to do. Even Notre Dame, I'm a big fan of them. They were 9-0 this year, but they replaced their quarterback who was 3-0. So, I mean, it's just hard to get those quarterbacks in these situations, man. Sometimes they're just some sleepers.
But, Chuck, A.J. McCarron, DeShone Kizer, some of the examples you're giving, I'm giving you a rebuttal on that to say they had some guys that were first-round picks and second-round picks and NFL-quality picks. So we appreciate you checking in, Chuck. Always a pleasure to hear from you. And if you want to join the show like Chuck did, 713-780-3776. Call, text, or hit us on Twitter. We're in the final hour of the show with about 30 minutes to go. It's the Usual Suspects right here on Sports Prep 94.1 and ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Welcome into the final half hour of the big show. It's the Usual Suspects on a Monday. ESPN 97.5, SportsMap 94.1. If you know the old saying, you can't beat them, join them. Well, when you want to talk Saints and you can get cut off real quickly and can't get into the show, you might as well just show up and hang out with us like our good friend Clarence did. Always good to see Clarence in the house. He's checking out the daiquiris. They are fantastic, as well as the great food. We're going to take you till 4. Klitz will take you till 7, all right here at Buku.
I tell you what, though, if you do come out, and you should come out, just be careful because Clarence has a daiquiri, which has alcohol in it. He is also an LSU fan, and we know after this game on Saturday that LSU fans are prone to walk around and try to poke people in the beehole. So y'all be careful when you're out here with Clarence. I don't want anybody, and he's just held up two fingers, and those they're not skinny, so y'all be careful when you get out here if you run into Clarence, all
right?
Clarence
always likes to call up and give us the shocker information. I think he can give that to you in more than one way if you're not careful based on the results of college football this weekend. Peace, right, Clarence? Okay, yeah. No peace signs from you. Keep the fingers together just for the sake of us all. All right, so we're going to continue to roll on. Yes.
Speaking of that, OU Mike said, I didn't know there was an LSU Dylan. That's pretty damn
funny. A good text.
Wow.
That is a good text, OU Mike. Good for you.
Will the rebuttal come in time?
I doubt it. Somebody, Blake Adams asked us thoughts on Sig leaving the Astros. Could it lead to possible negative outcomes and moves?
It's a crazy story, isn't it?
Man.
Dude came from nowhere and, you know, ends up being a big help for the organization. If you don't know, he's like an analytics guru.
Yeah, they call it ground control or whatever. I think him and the other cat, Brian.
Major Tom? Oh.
No. But don't downplay the significance of the loss. Basically, those guys, his job was something like director of decision sciences. That's a huge part of what the Astros do. Now, I tend to believe that that is not just held by him. Like, he's got people that work in the organization, and that'll be passed along to a lot of people. So,
yeah. You hope that just like in any other situation where, like, an assistant general manager with one team gets a general manager gig, that that's one of those deals where he learned along the way. He also taught others as he was doing his deal. And the Astros, like you said, I know for a fact, their analytics department, which shared notes with Daryl and the Rockets, they compared the way they did things. It's deep.
You were around that and with the Rockets. Yeah. And when you lose somebody like that within the organization, that they don't take all of that information with them.
Right.
That's already people
they
are trained
the knowledge
in the ways
and the formulas and the actual numbers that make sense in terms of going after certain players and how they fit, but the systems stay in place. And there's, you know, the good thing that you also have to realize is the relationships are there to where if they leave, they can always come back. And that's what happened in the case of the Rockets in a couple of situations where you got a guy named Sachin Gupta who was just a genius under Daryl when he first got out of college. He got a job with Sam Hinkie and the Sixers. He did a lot of great things, and he's been able to come back and work for Daryl after that. He has a couple other guys like that in the organization, and I know the Astros are just like that. So, yeah. You know, don't be mad that he left. Be happy that he was there, and he helped get some of the guys and shape some of the aspects of this team that they have on the field right now. So.
Classell Clarence eyeing the TV behind us where they were showing the Michael Thomas cell phone celebration, pulling out the flip phone from stupid. Under the goalpost.
Did you? I was asking you during the break.
As an ode to Joe Horn.
I feel like they should do an NFL version of the Ken Griffey Jr. commercial for Troy Aikman and others. Just let the kids have their fun. Let them play. I mean, Troy Aikman was just so anti-Michael Thomas, and what are you doing? This is just terrible, and, you know, could cost your team the game. And others, okay,
well, that
look,
part was true.
The game that was still on the line, true. And I give you that. And I said that during the break.
The fact that they had the ball, what, the 42?
Yeah.
That's playing with fire. I mean, you don't have quite the defense to be holding up like that and putting the defense in that kind of position. They held up, and everything worked out fine. But I can't imagine that Saints fan was none too happy with the outcome after the penalty.
Now, you're the professional lip reader, but I can tell you that all I could think of is when Sean Payton had that little conversation with him on the sidelines. He's like, I know you think we got this under control, but God forbid that thing comes back to bite us, because they did get the kickoff run back.
That's what I'm saying.
Past
they ended
the 40.
Up at the 42.
Yeah. So it was a situation where, that could have backfired.
And this isn't the Dolphins. That's the Rams at the 42 needing to go down and score. So it could have been a lot worse. Fortunately for them, it all's well that ends well. But, I mean, I thought it was okay.
The backstory was great, though. I'm on my way to the stadium, and I stopped at kind of a shady liquor store that I figured would still have flip phones. And I was able to get two pretty cheap so I could put one under each
that
of the pads and the goalposts.
Is you had to not only go out and put this under one goalpost, you had to plan because you didn't know what end zone you might score in.
Yep.
And now, how long has he been doing that? Like, it is.
No, he just did it for this game.
What I'm saying, like, if he, you know,
but
let's
they
say
asked
you don't
him,
score.
He could have done the Tom Brady thing because he could have had the people that were involved in the whole deflate gate with the phone and everything like that. Because they asked him in the post game, they're like, so did you do it yourself? And he's like, no, I just, let's just say that, you know, people were there to help if I needed it. But, you know, we made sure we had one under each padding in each goalpost.
It makes you wonder, like, Julio Jones, which, by the way, finally gets a touchdown catch, and the whole team goes nuts. Good for them. They all, you know, showed their respect to Julio Jones. But could you imagine if he's planning something like that, and you're going, like, 8-9 games without a touchdown?
The thing is, though, Michael Thomas has been kind of that under-the-radar guy. Like, if you're not a fantasy football player or a real deep NFL guru-type, you know, fan – You maybe wouldn't know his name, per se. And lately, he's been getting in Twitter battles and been, you know, vocal with other players, getting into – who is it that he got into it with? If it was Josh Norman or it was somebody that he got into it recently. Or maybe it was my man from Jacksonville. One way or another, he's been getting into it with defensive backs. He's been getting on Twitter, very uncharacteristic of him. And now the guy that normally just hands the football to the referee is doing cell phone acting out – touchdown celebrations, and I get the homage to Joe Horn. Joe Horn said he basically was almost driven to tears watching that.
Really?
Seriously. I mean, if there was some kind of choreography, if some kind of acting, like if you want to see kind of like the fun celebrations, the Seahawks did a choreographed dance where the guys looked like New Kids on the Block, and then the guy who got the touchdown came right down the center of like a Soul Train dance line. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit for that.
I'm good with that. I'm waiting for DeAndre Hopkins to do his ode to Billy White Shoes Johnson next. That has to be a thing, right?
I was a fan of that touchdown dance as a kid. I'd like to see that reenacted.
Yeah. Or the Ernest Givens do a little electric slide in the end zone.
Yeah, I didn't know where you're going with that, but okay.
Yeah, that would be good, too. We'll make it happen.
I've heard Ernie could slide.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Hmm? I've heard Ernie could slide.
I don't know what that means.
Okay, good. I'm just saying.
Okay, good.
I would go with the Billy White Shoes. I think that's the most famous touchdown celebration in Oilers history.
I would agree.
And if you don't do that, do the Earl Campbell. Just hand it to the ref, act like you've been there before, and move on with your day.
Yeah.
That could probably work out for you, too. You see the two – speaking of that, with all the NFL games and the way we do picks, did you see Vegas and the Vegas odds makers and bookies took one of the biggest hits in the history of sportsbook betting?
I did not. What on earth?
Yeah, crazy. They said that the spreads were not big enough, and in the game that involved the Vikings and the Lions, the Steelers and the Browns, or the Chiefs and the Browns, the Steelers and the Ravens, people were able to capitalize on the point spreads and take Vegas to town. It was the third straight subpar weekend for the books, but Sunday was in a class by itself, an all-timer, as some veteran bookmakers called it. A guy that's been in the book business for 25 years said it makes his top 10 list of costliest Sundays for the Vegas books.
Wow, and that's been around for a long time.
No doubt. So, I mean, that's why it pays to listen and, go. Of course, go as you'll tell them, go to my bookie.
You're damn right.
Yeah, they said that the Saints beat the Rams as they were the underdog. Patriots covered in the Packer game. There were just far too many games to capitalize on, so that Vegas took some big hits. So look for them to try and bounce back hard this weekend.
So we talked a little bit about, and I know we're going to go to break, so we can do it after the break, but we talked a little bit about who our top four would be in the NCAA, you know, in the next round of the playoff committee, selection committee. Maybe we can rediscuss or revisit our top 10 because we've had some big wins and big losses over the weekend and things might have changed a little bit in that regard. Yeah, our consensus number one, obviously, I think the consensus across football losing to the Saints. So it'll be interesting, I think, just to find out where you have them slotted versus me. And
I had teased it earlier to say, based on the Saints winning that game against the Rams, has your opinion changed on who the best team in football is? We can talk about that as well. So we'll get to our top tens and talk about maybe some surprises that might be out there for you and what we think. We already know what Clarence thinks. But if you want to be like Clarence and think about great food and beverage, come on out to Buku. The Blitz is getting ready. They're here. They're going to take over here and take you home until 7 o'clock so you do nothing but get entertained and listen to the best and number one sports show in the town. Barry and I will wrap it up with one more segment with Nick back on the controls. It's the usual suspects on Sports Prep 94.1 and ESPN 97.5.
The most delicious app in the business and the easiest steak you can download. Wait, I think I messed that up. The most delicious steak in the business and the easiest sports radio app you can download.
Nice.
Yeah, right?
Saltgrass Steakhouse presents the ESPN 97.5 app. Download it today. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, final segment of the show. We appreciate you taking us along for the ride. It's The Usual Suspects. It's Barry. It's Nick. It's Joel. It's a Monday. On ESPN 97.5 and, of course, SportsMap 94.1. Fred and AJ already in the house, so the Blitz are going to take you home till 7 o'clock. There's a reason why they're the number one show in the city, because you guys are entertained and follow them on a regular basis. So they're coming up next, and they will entertain you all the way until you get to where you need to go. You were talking before the break, Barry, that we were going to start breaking down our new top 10 if we were looking at the NFL going in to, what is it, week 10, believe, of NFL action. And I asked you guys earlier in the show if the outcome of what happened in the Superdome yesterday will impact the way that you rate, especially the top teams in the NFC, if not all of football, because I've been a staunch supporter of what the Rams have on the roster from top to bottom, and adding a guy like Fowler, I thought could only help them. I think the NFC still comes down to those two teams. I really like what the Saints have done to solidify their defensive line. I still have a lot of questions about their secondary. And I think that if you look at the schedule going down the stretch, the Saints have a really tough go in the final 6-7 weeks of the season. I think whoever has home field, it's going to play a huge role in who comes out of the NFC. Because I don't care how good the Rams are. If you got to come in and play in that building, in that environment, with that noise level, the Saints are going to be really, really tough to knock out.
Yeah, you know, we talked about coming into the break about new top 10. Like last week, I had Rams, Chiefs, Saints, Patriots, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think that those are still the top four, but you can flip that a little bit. I move the Chiefs up to number one right now.
Did you?
I think that I know they have the one loss, but everybody has a loss now, and
even with their defense.
Yeah, as well as they're playing, they're beating everybody. I mean, right now, if I had them at number two right behind the Rams last week and the only team that ahead of them lost, then you got to move them up to number one. Do you move the Patriots up for beating a wounded and really undermanned Green Bay team? I don't think you can. I think you could make the case to move the Saints up to number one.
I am going to make that case.
But now you got to – who do you pick? If the Saints and the Chiefs play, who are you taking?
Again, I think that really is a matter of whose field are you playing on. Because I think if you play on turf, and I know how fast Hill is for the Chiefs, and I know what Mahomes can do. But again, when you put him into the hostile environment of the Superdome, I think it makes a big difference. And again, on the flip side, if you got to play that at Arrowhead, and you got to play it on grass, and you got to play it under the conditions of cold and elements factor in, I give the Chiefs the advantage. But I think you got one and two right, regardless of which way you go, because I'll go the other way and put the Saints at one because their defense is starting to impress me with the things that they're building there. But I would say Saints, Chiefs, you can't go wrong, 1-2. You still got Rams at three?
Yep. I have the Rams third, Patriots four.
I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to switch it up a little bit here. The Patriots don't impress me that much.
Okay.
And obviously what you saw last night means they really rely super heavily on Gronkowski. I think the Steelers are coming. I think that Connor is proving that if Le'Veon Bell just goes away, that they're still, like, to your poll question, when the fact that you can interchange an Antonio Brown and a Juju Smith-Schuster and realize that both those guys are all world and what they can do for a experienced quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, they got their running game back. Their defense is playing a lot better than it was when we were talking about them being just a sieve letting teams run through them. I would give you that I would move the Steelers all the way up to four this week.
Okay. I've got the Patriots four, Panthers five, and Steelers six. So no love for the Panthers from you?
I got
what?
The Panthers at five. Okay. As much as I've just not been a believer in them.
The Patriots down to six.
I am.
That's just because they beat your Packers? Or?
I don't care that they beat them because the better team won. I just look at what they have and the way they have to be like over-the-top resourceful and gadget plays and all the things that they try to do. Their defensive line played good last night, but that's against a makeshift Packers offensive line. I just think overall, yeah, you give the kudos to Brady and White and some of the guys he has. But you're not going to be against a really good team, especially teams with a good defensive line. There's no way you're going to play a wide receiver in the backfield and be able to get away with it to the level that they did last night.
I mean, also though, I don't know that the Patriots defense does get enough credit. I mean, I think they're 11th in points allowed, which that's not bad in the NFL. It's not, they're not a top five defense, but they do enough and they can score enough to win games. So. But I think you make a compelling point at least, and for the Steelers as well. I actually have the Steelers sixth. I have the Chargers seventh. I move the Texans up to eight. After a win on the road in Denver, I think right now they're playing well, and so I move them up to eight. I don't think it'll take long, though, for the Vikings to start to move up this list. I have them at nine, and then the Bears making an appearance at 10.
The Bears are interesting to me because they're now the sexy pick. I've seen so many people doing polls on Twitter that says, who's the team that's getting it together that can start to challenge the Saints and the Rams. And
I
all
think
of a sudden,
Steelers is that team that you said. But
yeah, and all of a sudden people are throwing the Bears up there that are leading the poll, and I'm going, for what? I mean, Trubisky threw for 139 yards or less yesterday. The Bills just made sure that defensively the Bears looked like superheroes because they just kept giving them the ball.
Yeah.
And the Bears did what they were supposed to do, but it wasn't like they did anything extraordinary and outstanding on offense. Obviously, we know that the Bears are a one-dimensional team, and it starts with their defense. I think the Vikings have both sides of the ball. I think there's a lot of people that have been crapping all over Kirk Cousins saying he hasn't done enough. But you know what? He finds a way to get his two best receivers the football. And we talk about teams that have had struggles to get a running back to get back. You mentioned Fournette in Jacksonville. I think Dalvin Cook is back now. And if he just gets comfortable in the backfield and they can get some more balance in that offense and keep the defense off the field as much as they've had to play, Minnesota's a very balanced and talented team that you and I at the start of the year thought were going to be headed for the Super Bowl.
And it's funny because when I was putting together those four teams and their trios, I really wanted to include the Vikings because I think you can make that case that they have a pretty outstanding trio in Cousins, Cook, and Thielen. The problem is that they just haven't done it this year, and that was kind
Diggs.
Of the point.
And Diggs, too, yeah.
Yeah, but that was the point. They haven't really done it this year with Cooks. So they do have that trio, though. They do have the makings of a damn good offensive team if he can get back on track. It's a big if, though.
But you know what? The Chargers were a team that I was expecting to move out, and I was expecting them to crap the bed in Seattle. Tough place to play. A game that traditionally the Chargers, when they're supposed to step up and really show who they are, they really show their true colors and they fade. They didn't do that. They almost blew it. And Russell Wilson sure did have a chance to at least tie it. But overall, I like the way they're playing right now. You talk about a team with balance. The way Melvin Gordon runs the ball and gives them a weapon out of the backfield, and the fact that they've got Allen to throw the long ball to, they have good tight end play, and you've got another experienced signal caller in Phillip Rivers. That's a team that could be very scary come playoff time. That's a team that the Texans very well could see. If they get in and win the division. Granted, it would be a home game, and that would help Houston, but that's a team you have to be prepared to play because they've got all the weaponry, and they could be the sexy pick to kind of surprise some people in the AFC.
To me, obviously Phillip Rivers is one thing, but a healthy Melvin Gordon.
Yes.
He's been having some hamstring issues.
Yes,
but
he's always dingy.
A healthy Melvin Gordon means trouble for that team because, that. I mean, they can run the ball, and you know, he – Rivers has enough weapons, and Allen and Williams and Eckler on that team. So I think you're right. Towards the bottom end of the top 10, they might be one of those teams that sneaks in, gets a playoff berth as a wild card. And
on the flip side, if I give you three teams that still have a chance to turn it around and do something impactful, who you got if I give you the Eagles, the Jags, and Clarence's favorite, the Atlanta Falcons?
Man, the Falcons' offense is potent.
Man, if they can ever get it together, if Freeman comes back,
they
got a lot of weapons.
You know that Philly's not getting Ajayi back, so you know that's not going to happen.
Right, their running game's a little less than what it should be.
Yeah, you know, I would say the Eagles because of the division that they're in. I think that the Falcons having to play the Panthers and the Saints at least once more, that's a problem. But I think the Eagles, even without Ajayi, defensively they're going to be fine. Offensively, I think they'll be fine eventually, and they're in a pretty bad division. So I think that's the
best point to be made. There's not as many hurdles to have to get over and obstacles in your way to get into the playoffs and even win your division. When you're talking about the Cowboys still having a chance to come through there,
I mean the Saints looking up at the Panthers and the Falcons looking up at the Panthers and the Saints, who combined are 13-3.
That's so much more difficult than looking at a middle of the pack Redskins team that found a way to just roll over and die yesterday. A Cowboys team that's not even close to living up to even the diehard Cowboys expectations.
And the Eagles are one loss back from the Redskins.
Yeah, that's underachieving all season long, but they are the Super Bowl champs, and they've got a roster that says that they can still be there.
And the fact they're a +22 in that division, sitting in second place, Dallas is a +17. You got the Redskins at 5-3, leading the division at a -12. Point differential. So it lets you know that Philly might be on the right track. In a couple of these divisional games, they'll probably end up winning the NFC East.
No doubt about it. All right, that'll about do it for us for a Monday. Great show. Thanks to you guys. We appreciate you and all the usual suspects across the city. We'll do it again tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. Right here on ESPN 97.5 and, of course, SportsMap 94.1. For Barry and Nick, I'm Joel. Y'all have a great night. Stay tuned, everybody, because Fred, AJ, and the Blitz are next, and they're coming to you live from Buku at the corner of Richmond and Chimney Rock as well. Have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
And I didn't know if they sniffed their own farts or not.
Yeah, boy.
ESPN 97.5.